our website, Hagman and the Hagman, for show accessibility venues. Follow us on our social networking sites as well. Folks, also, subscribe. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Again, doing so raises the visibility and, of course, that of all of our guests. Coming up here next is Pastor David Langford from thevoiceofevangelism.com. Links to his website program in the program description on both BTR, YouTube, and on our website as well. I can't wait to get his take on everything, essentially. Before we get to him, I think about my love for books, and I love to read, and I love to sit by the fire and read a great book. And if you haven't done so already, T.C. Joseph, This Generation series of novels, what a great series he has put together. It's really just this thrilling series of novels. He takes us through into the lives of three families in a world where conspiracy theories and Bible prophecies collide. And, you know, many, many books today talk about either biblical prophecy or fiction, but few can do it as well as T.C. Joseph has and combine both. And his novels, by the way, in addition to that being great reading by the fire with a hot cup of cocoa and, the fire roaring in the background as the snow flies outside. In addition to that, they can be used as tools to wake people up as to just how close we are to the end game, shall we say. Folks, T.C. Joseph, remember that. He's a talented writer, I gotta tell you. His books are fantastic. He's got three. Book one is Precipice, book two is Pentecost, and book three is Penance. All three are great books, and they're it's just a great series. He's got great reviews from Kirkus and as well as Blue Ink. You can read about him. Go to the Amazon.com page for This Generation series of novels. But definitely, folks, definitely, definitely well worth the read. That's T.C. Joseph's This Generation series of novels. Without any further ado, Ms. Pastor David Langford. Pastor, great to have you on, sir.
Be on tonight, my friend.
Hey, it's great. You know what? It's great to talk to you, and we spent earlier talking about all of the current events, 16 days away from inauguration. So many things taking place: the economy, the geopolitics, you name it. It seems like it's popping everywhere, and you don't know where to look. So, what do you want to talk about tonight? Where do you want to start?
Well, you know, there's a lot of consternation. There's a lot of fear, a lot of trepidation, a lot of anxiety, but I personally refuse to live like that. To me, a Christian life is supposed to be a life of discipline, moderation, and balance. I refuse to just listen to doom and gloom 24/7. I read it, I listen to it, and I measure, and I stop. Then I go 99% of the time back to the Word of God. That is where I get my refreshment, my edification, and my strength. And that is, Doug, what keeps me balanced. We all have driven a car at one time or another that had a wheel that was unbalanced. And it wobbles, it does all sorts of crazy stuff. And, you know, it's an aberration, it's an anomaly. The fact is, it can be fixed if you stop and take the time to fix it. And I was reading today in Proverbs 19 and 21, there are many devices in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. There were many devices by men throughout history. Lucifer, Joseph's brothers, Pharaoh, Herod. There's always been men that had their own devices. And that word devices in the Hebrew actually means schemes. They have their schemes. But notice what he said. There are many schemes. We'll replace the word devices with schemes. There are many schemes in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. In other words, just because men have their schemes, their plans, their purported devices, the counsel of God is what's going to stand. Okay? So I know that there are men, and we know this is, we have to understand, this is going to come to pass. There will be a third world war. All of these things are going to take place because the Bible has foretold us these are the things that are going to happen. In Matthew 24:6, and ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. What was the next phrase? See that you be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Jesus doesn't want us to be troubled and live a life of anxiety and fear because we see what is going to take place. What a blessing to be able to know beforehand this is going to take place. You know, anyone hates to get caught off guard or unawares. We'd like to know what's going to happen so we can, quote-unquote, prepare for it. You know, the famous proverb, Proverbs 27:12, a wise man foresees trouble coming and takes refuge, but the simple pass on and are punished. And in the Hebrew, when it says, and they are punished, it doesn't mean it's a punitive punishment from God. It means they suffer unduly because they did not make plans. Now, God foretold Pharaoh in a dream, which he could not understand, there was going to be 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. He couldn't understand the dream. He was profusely troubled, profusely perplexed. So the butler, of course, the cupbearer of Pharaoh, when Pharaoh kept having these troubling dreams, the butler said, oh, I remember my faults this day. There's a man in Egypt that, or a man in prison that can interpret these dreams. Well, go get the man. And so they go get Joseph. They bring him up. Pharaoh explains the dreams. Joseph gives him the interpretation. And you have to appreciate Joseph's humility. He said, get you a man that can administrate the affairs of what's coming, because you're going to have to put back 20% of everything that you harvest over the next 7 years to get you through the 7 years of the dearth and the famine. And, of course, Pharaoh said, well, I've not seen such wisdom in all of Egypt. You know, you're that man. And what I gather from that is God is forewarning us, and it's up to us to make the proper decisions, do the right things, to get ourselves in the right alignment for these events. So when they do come, we don't suffer unduly. As I said, the Bible said, a wise man foresees trouble coming and takes refuge, but the simple pass on and are punished. They're not punished, as I said, because they did something wrong. They suffer because they did not get ready. And so we hear all of these events that are going to take place, and I believe Donald Trump will be inaugurated. I believe he'll take his place in office. I don't doubt that the animosity, the animus of the world, the New World Order, is not going to be stoked and want to disrupt that. You got to remember, as soon as Jesus was born, Herod told the Magi, when you find out where the child is, come back and give me a report so I too can go and worship him. But the Lord came to the Magi in a dream and said, you can't go back, you got to go another way. Therefore, Herod rose up, slew all newborn males 2 years of age and younger. Again, we're talking about there are many schemes in a man's heart, but the counsel of the Lord stood. So God always heads off the enemy, because the enemy doesn't know the mind of God and how God can maneuver around all of these events. So I've just come to take these things in stride, and I've often said this, and I'll say it again tonight, whatever you magnify gets bigger. If you magnify your problems, they get bigger than God. If you magnify the Lord, he gets bigger than your problems. We too often magnify our circumstances, our situations, and our problems. And I've been guilty of that. I've magnified things totally out of proportion. Yeah, and I was wrong for doing it.
Yeah.
It's a known fact. The things that people fear, 95% of them never come to pass, never come to fruition. You know, and this is what fear does. You know, 1 John 4:18 says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. I want the people to understand fear, more than anything else, is an imagination. It's just a figment of one's imagination. But that figment, that imagination can become so powerful, it begins to torment our minds.
Mm.
You know, I started getting into fist fights in the sixth grade. And I fought, and I had more fist fights from the sixth grade till I graduated. You shake stick at why, I don't know. It seemed like every dude wanted to challenge me for whatever reason. And as you do that for so many times, you get to the point you understand how to fight. And you don't wait for there to be an argument, or you hit me, I'm going to hit you back. You get to the point, you don't even wait for that. You preempt. You just preempt, because you can recognize, I can't walk away from this because I see the man's mind, his disposition, his verbiage, or whatever. And I'm not going to be tormented by a person or a circumstance or situation. So we have to be wise and mature enough to look at a situation, say, am I going to let this torment me, or am I going to deal with it correctly? We've all talked about, do you manage the problem, or does the problem manage you? Do you manage the problem, or do you let the circumstance drive you crazy, drive you insane, drive you into fear? You know, we got people who won't leave their house. They have a phobia. You got people who won't drive a car because of a phobia. Yeah, that's why people, they say, well, you're homophobic. I'm not a fear of a queer. You know, I hate to be that blunt, but I have no fear of them. That's something they're trying to put on me, right, and say, I have a mental disorder. I have a disconnect in my mind. I don't have a disconnect in my mind regarding that subject. I just don't want to be around them, you know, unless they want to give their heart to the Lord, because I know they're evil. I don't want to be subject myself to that, or much less their lifestyle and how they live and what they do. But my point is, we can't let the things that we hear and we read and we see dictate how we live our lives and how we respond. Everyone listening has fire insurance. I pray to God none of us ever have to use it. But I have it because it's common sense. I even have earthquake insurance on my house. And I'll never forget, well, the first time I got that, the agent said, do you think we're really going to have an earthquake here in North Carolina? I said, no, I don't anticipate one. But just in the event, for another $80 a year, my house is covered. I just think that's only common sense.
Yeah, it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
I mean, you know, for $7 a month, and you know, that's just, and if it happens, they're going to rebuild my house. And the people around me will have to take care of it themselves, because that's why it's so cheap here in North Carolina. And it's just what I call common sense. Again, it gives me an element of security that if for some unknown reason there was a terrible earthquake in the late 1880s, I believe it was, if I remember correctly, in Charleston, South Carolina. So there is a potential of a threat, but it's not a real threat. But the point is, for $7 a month, you know, I can make sure that if that were to happen, my house is covered when 99.9% of the houses won't be covered.
Right.
So, you know, people need to understand that the devil is the master of fear. He's the one that brings the fear, the anxiety, the trepidation into people's hearts. And I want to reiterate that verse again, Proverbs 19:21. There are many devices or many schemes in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the foundation, nevertheless, the counsel or the will of God, that shall stand. So, you know, we know these things are going to happen. The $64,000 question is when. You cannot continue to keep printing money, $20 trillion debt. There's going to be some type of reset. Something is going to happen somewhere, sometime. When, how, what, I don't know. I'm not going to sit around and worry about it. I'm going to be ready in the event it takes place. You know, I'm not going to sit and wait for the crash or the detriment of the situation to now dictate my life and what I'm going to do. I want to be ready for whatever comes. The greatest story in the Bible is Joseph preparing and the five wise virgins versus the five foolish virgins.
Right.
You know, they were all virgins, and their goal was to be prepared to meet the bridegroom, but the Bible said the wise took oil in their lamps with their vessels, but the foolish only took oil in their lamps. That's all they took. And so the reason the wise took another vessel with oil is because no one knew how long the wait would be. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. So we don't know how long this time of tarrying, the spans, how long, we don't know. So if you don't know, then you prepare. It could happen before Donald Trump goes into the office. I don't doubt if Donald Trump has been raised up of God to do some things, that these evil ones are going to work in every way, shape, form, and fashion they can against the man. Just let's use Joseph for an example. He was God's vessel to go down to Egypt, become the prime minister, to become the viceroy of Egypt. And the reason God ordained that was because God was going to use Egypt to clothe, house, and feed his people until he grew them into a nation. And then when they left, he said, you're going to leave with the silver, the gold, and the fine linen. Those were the reparations. That was the redemption. He paid them back full for all their years of toil and of labor. So God is going to still use the world and its system indirectly to take care of God's people. When Daniel went into Babylonian captivity, he was promoted inside the Babylon kingdom. And of course, the last promotion was if he could read and understand the writing on the wall while Belshazzar was having his drunken party, one of the great things was going to be a great golden chain necklace around his neck. And he was going to be clothed with scarlet, and then he would be made third ruler in all the kingdom. So here was Daniel in Babylonian captivity, a dedicated, consecrated, sold-out man of God who did not compromise in any capacity, but he was being exalted in the midst of the enemies. And when you look at things and know that God can bless me in the midst of my problems, in the midst of my troubles, in the midst of my struggles, why should I then live in fear and anxiety? And that doesn't take away our responsibility for us to do what we know is right. Now, when the Medo-Persians and their Congress, Senate, whatever you want to deem it at that time, made a law that a man could not pray unless he asked the king, they did that on purpose to snare Daniel, because they knew that Daniel was going to go to his window three times a day and look toward Jerusalem and pray. See? And they made a decree that no man could do that without asking the king. And of course, Darius was the king at that time. He signed the legislation, the bill, however you want to term it. You can read all of this in the sixth chapter of Daniel. And of course, they did this intentionally to destroy Daniel. And that's, we have the story of Daniel being thrown into the den of lions. And of course, God shut their mouths. And of course, the king was troubled and was petrified. He didn't sleep a wink that night, because he knew that Daniel was a godly man. And, he came to the den of lions that morning, and he's cried out to Daniel. He said, "Oh Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God delivered you?" And the king said, "O king, live forever." And of course, the tables were turned. All of those who made this legislation, God cast those men, their wives, and their children into the den of lions, and they ate them up. And so then Darius came along and made another decree to negate that decree so that Daniel could continue to pray. So my point is, we have to keep trusting God and not live under a spirit of fear, a spirit of anxiety. You know, Daniel went to his window anyway and prayed. He didn't stop. Now, we got the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the book of Daniel. And they wouldn't fall down and pay homage to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. And because they didn't, they gave them a second chance. They said, maybe you don't understand, you know, what's going on here. When you hear the music, you got to fall down, and you've got to worship this idol. And of course, they didn't. But they told the king, they said, there's one thing for sure. Whether God delivers us out of the fiery furnace, we will be delivered out of your hand. And, of course, they heated the furnace up seven times harder than ever before, and they cast them into the fiery furnace, and the fire was so hot that it slew the soldiers that threw them in there. And then, of course, Nebuchadnezzar looked into the furnace and said, did we not throw three men in the fiery furnace? They said, yes, O king. He said, but I see four men in the midst of the fire, and the fourth is likened to the Son of God. So again, Nebuchadnezzar had his device, had his scheme. He was going to punish them, burn them to a crisp, and God intervened because God's counsel is the one that stood. We have to remember, this is when you've really come to trust the Lord, you'll say, you know, it just doesn't matter. I serve God. I love God with all of my heart, with all of my soul, and with all of my mind. God is going to take care of me one way or the other. And if God doesn't take care of me or deliver me, then it wasn't God's will. God wanted to bring me on home. Now no one in the natural wants to suffer. That would be asinine to say, yeah, it's great to suffer. That's not true. If we had to suffer physically, you know, torment, vexation, whatever, physically, or emotionally as far as that goes. But at the end of the day, you know, I believe God has already predetermined those whom he will suffer and allow to go through those things, and there are those who he will not suffer. And, of course, God will make that decision because he is sovereign in all the affairs of men, and he knows, you know, he knows people's hearts better than they know their hearts. If you'll read about the last eight verses in Hebrews chapter 11, you will see the dichotomy of those who were not delivered and they didn't want deliverance. And then there were those who God did deliver, such as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, such as Daniel. And then there were those like Isaiah. History says Isaiah was cut into with a timber saw. You know, he may have been like Peter. His intestinal fortitude was off the charts. Peter said, I'm not worthy to be crucified like my Lord. Hang me upside down. Stephen was a mere layman. They stoned him to death. He said, Father, don't lay this sin to their charge. What a disposition mentally and emotionally that these certain men had where that didn't bother them. You know, and so I have to believe in God's sovereignty. He makes that decision, you know, for us. I honestly believe that if some of us had been standing around Stephen when they started stoning him, the Spirit of God would have come upon us. We would have knelt down beside of him and embraced him and been stoned with him and not given a flip about our lives. Then there would be those like Peter. He ran. And Jesus told them, he said, you're going to be scattered like sheep tonight. You're going to be scattered like sheep. You're all going to run. He already knew that. But then after Peter's conversion, coming back to Christ, look at his attitude afterward. Emboldened with the power of God, the grace of God, and was determined to do whatever. It didn't matter then. And so I just look at it, you know, and at the end of the day, that God is sovereign, and the counsel of God is going to stand, no matter what man's devices and schemes might be. And they've got them, Doug. They've got their schemes, they've got their plans, because their father is the devil. But no matter what the devil plots, God can overcome it.
And you make a great point. And the accounts that you gave in the Bible, recorded in the Bible, can be applied to the present day scenarios. Even we can see reflections of them, and I mean we can see our reflections in them. It depends on which. Well, it depends on how you feel, I guess, or it depends on your level of spiritual maturity, perhaps. I'm not even sure I know how to even enunciate that or to really correctly explain that. But nonetheless, it's...
I just believe God makes that determination.
Yeah, okay, okay, yeah. But without regard, I mean, the bottom line is I look at this, and you're right. It's God's got it all under control. The schemes of the devil and the ungodly are always going to be there.
And, right, absolutely.
Yeah.
He said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you, so we need to believe that.
Pastor, hold on to that thought. We're up against the bottom of the hour here. Pastor David Langford, what a great gift that we have with Pastor Langford, sharing such incredible knowledge, spiritual guidance for all of us in these times. Stay right where you are. I'll be right back. The Hagman and the Hagman Report, coming to you live from our radio and television studios in blustery Northwest Pennsylvania. Our guest, as always on Wednesday, last hour, is Pastor David Langford, the voice of evangelism.com. And I just, you know, his gift of time, it's just, to me, I'm so thankful for that, because the spiritual nourishment, the education, the inspiration which we derive from his appearances, it's second to none. And, you know, Pastor Langford asks for nothing and gives freely of his time and his lessons, and we need to support Pastor Langford and of course his ministry. Before we get back to Pastor Langford, you know, we were talking biblically, seeds and the harvest, and speaking of seeds, the best seed banks in the world, in my view, Texas Ready seed banks are ranked the highest in the world, and for good reason. They contain regionally appropriate open pollinated heirloom seeds, and most seed companies, they don't take that into account. Hybrid seeds are only good for one garden. They don't reproduce true to type. That's why it's necessary to purchase stable heirloom seeds. And Texas Ready uses certified seeds. Most seed banks don't even do that. It's too expensive. Texas Ready believes that their customers, our listeners, are worth it. The germination rate on their seeds is outstanding. And you've heard all of the negative predictions about what could be coming or what is to come. We don't know when, so be prepared. Folks, I think one of the best investments you can make is, in fact, a Texas Ready seed bank. They've got 80-plus varieties of vegetables and fruits, including a dual-purpose herbs, culinary, and medicinal. The larger banks come with training manuals, so you're not out there gardening, blindly. So check out their website at texasready.net. We have Texas Ready .net seed banks. We love them. We think that they are really the best of the best. And we've seen seed banks. Man, have we seen seed banks. These are the best of the best. TexasReady.net. TexasReady.net. That's TexasReady.net. Make sure you tell them that you heard this on Hagman and Hagman. Pastor Langford, again, thank you so much for your time, your gracious gift of time, and for your inspiration and information as we walk through what we're walking through together. And so much uncertainty, yet so much assurance through biblical scripture and the Word of God.
I want to go to Jeremiah 39. Those who are listening tonight or watching and they have their Bibles, Jeremiah 39, beginning at verse 6. I want people to see the sovereignty of God and I said this the last several programs, God can destroy a government and save his people. I don't think people get that, because they don't, how can that be? But it can be that because of the sovereignty of God. We must remember, God can do anything. Jeremiah 32:27 says, "Behold, I'm the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me?" Even Sarah and Abraham could not believe they could actually have a child. God said, "I will return unto thee the time of life, and this time next year you will have a baby." And I shared that some weeks ago. And not only did Abraham have Isaac with Sarah, after Sarah died, Abraham married a woman named Keturah and had five or six more children from her. So this was not a one-time deal that God restored Abraham physically, but it continued on probably up till his death. But in Jeremiah 39, beginning at verse 6, the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, slew the sons of Zedekiah and Riblah before his eyes. Also the king of Babylon slew all the nobles of Judah. Jeremiah had warned Zedekiah to submit himself and not rebel against Nebuchadnezzar, because God had ordained this. But again, Zedekiah was disobedient, so God had him killed. He could have went back to Babylon and could have lived out his life. I don't know, but I do know because of disobedience, he was put in chains and his two sons were killed. Moreover, he put out Zedekiah's eyes and bound him with chains to carry him to Babylon. And the Chaldeans, or the Babylonians, burned the king's house and the houses of the people with fire and broke down the walls of Jerusalem. Then Jebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive into Babylon the remnant of the people that remained in the city, and those that fell away that fell to him with the rest of the people that remained. But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left of the poor of the people, which had nothing in the land of Judah, and gave them vineyards and fields at that same time. Now Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, gave charge concerning Jeremiah to Jebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, saying, "Take him and look well to him, and do him no harm, but do unto him even as he shall say unto thee." In other words, he's telling Nebuzaradan to submit himself to Jeremiah's authority concerning Jeremiah's life. So Jebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, sent Nebushashban, Nab-Arias, and Nergal, Sherezer, Rabmag, and all the king of Babylon's princes. Even they sent and took Jeremiah out of the court of the prison and committed him unto Jealaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, that he should carry him home, so he dwelt among the people. Now the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah while he was shut up in the court of the prison, saying, "Go and speak to Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Behold, I will bring my words upon this city for evil and not for good, and they shall be accomplished in that day before thee. But I will deliver thee in that day, saith the Lord, and thou shalt not be given into the hand of the men of whom thou art afraid." This shows us Jeremiah had fear for his own life. He even feared these men. And God said, I know you're afraid of these men. "For I will surely deliver thee, and thou shalt not fall by the sword, but thy life shall be for a prey unto thee, because thou hast put thy trust in me, saith the Lord." Because Jeremiah trusted God and lived right, God took care of him. I won't read all of chapter 40, but in Jeremiah chapter 40, verse 5, the last phrase says, "So the captain of the guard gave him," Jeremiah, "victuals and a reward, and let him go." His hand was freely given to back to himself to do as he willed. because he had been obedient to God and done what God had told him to do. And so this is why God honors obedience. That's why Samuel said to Saul, obedience is better than sacrifice. You know, people sacrifice prayer, fasting, tithing, giving, but if you haven't obeyed God, that does not impress God. Obeying God means you're going to do the right thing, whether you like it or not, whether you're comfortable with it or not, or whether you see it like God sees it or not, you're still going to obey God, which is a type of trust. To obey God means, I trust you, Lord. You know, if God tells you to do something, your faith in him says, I'm going to trust God, even though I don't understand this. This doesn't make sense to me, but I know that God will bless me. I was in Bozeman. You were there, Doug. And the Lord spoke to my heart and told me to give all my book money away at that meeting. I shared some of it with the offering Sunday morning for the Hagmans. And I gave the other portion to someone else. And the Lord spoke to my heart and said, if you'll obey me, I'll give you back more than you can imagine. And he didn't say, I'll double it, I'll triple it. He just said, I'll give you back more than you can imagine. And I gave the money away. And there was a lady in that meeting, and she was praying about who she was to bless. And when my wife stood up and sang that morning, Sunday morning, the Lord spoke to the lady's heart, said, that's the couple you bless. And without making a big hoopla, when Steve and I were doing the water baptism, she engaged my wife, and they had a few minutes of a conversation. She gave my wife an envelope. My wife said, what is this? She said, oh, nothing. My wife said, well, who are you? She said, well, you won't remember me after today. And so with the meeting ended, we went back to the motel, was changing clothes, I was wringing wet. My wife opened up the envelope, and there's a check for $10,000. You see, obedience, it's not the amount. I want people to understand, it's not about the amount of money. That's not what God is moved by. What God is moved by is obedience. If it's $2 and that's obedience to God, then God will bless like it was $2 billion. That it's never the amount. People get so enamored with a dollar amount. That's because these charlatans say, well, if you give this $1,000 seed, you'll plant this $258 seed. That's garbage. That's ludicrous. It's a charlatan. It's a swindler. It's a panhandler. It's vulgar. Whatever you want to name it, it's not of God. God doesn't work like that. The woman that gave the two mites, Jesus said she gave more than them all. She gave two little copper mites. She gave more than they are, and that in the Greek means you aggregate all that everybody gave and put it together. Jesus said she gave more than them all. And so my point is, it's never about the amount. It's about the obedience factor. Whatever God tells you to do, you do it. If he says stand still and it don't make sense, stand still anyway. He says go forward. Go forward. If he says, don't leave your house for the next hour. You were getting ready to go to the store. He said, just sit here and be still for an hour. Because he may be saving you from a car wreck. He may be saving you from an armed robbery. We don't know. And this is why obedience is so significant. And I'm going to say something here, and people can get upset. People are doing the wrong stuff. They're not spiritually minded. They're sowing discord. I know you're facing some junk that's unnecessary. These are carnally minded people. They are controlled by the devil. And, of course, the devil uses them to create havoc in our lives. And that's why it's important to who we fellowship with, who we listen to, things of that nature, because the devil's always looking for an avenue to get into our lives that he can harm us or injure us in some capacity. And so I believe when a man has a pure heart and he has clean hands and he honestly, with a pure heart, makes a mistake, I believe with all of my heart, God still takes care of you. He works, he removes, he heals, he binds the wound. Why? Because our hearts were pure and our hands were clean. Listen, good, godly people make mistakes for whatever reason. Maybe they didn't have the right information. Maybe somebody they put confidence in lied to them or misled them or whatever the case might be. And they acted on that and it ended up being bad. But because their heart was pure and their hands were clean, God said, I'm going to cover you on this. You will not suffer any loss here at all. You won't be harmed. You will not be injured because your heart is right. You see? Now, people on the outside may look at us and say, well, I don't think you've done the right thing. It doesn't matter what you think. Is what does God think? Have I listened to God? Have I obeyed God? See, you can always be, and you will, 9 out of 10 times, be misjudged by people around you. I don't think you handled it right. I don't think you did the right thing. You know what I'm saying, Doug?
You betcha.
Yeah. Well, you know, the old cliche is, don't judge me till you've walked in my shoes. See, now I can see when people have done something and they had no godly counsel, they had no godly insight, and it blew out of proportion and they brought that on themselves. I'm talking about keeping clean hands and a pure heart. You know, I try to keep myself from controversy as much as I can. I think mm-hmm. about what I'm going to say. I think about what I'm going to do. I think about my newsletter. I think about these things. Why? Because there's always a repercussion. So that's why obedience is so much better than sacrifice. Sometimes a sacrifice is literally considered, well, I did the great thing. I sacrificed something. Well, you may think that's great, but did you obey God coupled with the sacrifice? If you didn't obey God, your sacrifice just went out the door, because that sacrifice does not impress God. You have to obey God, and that's what made Jesus so dynamic, in that he not only sacrificed and gave his life, he was obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. And that's why he's been given a name that's above every name. Because he did both things. He was not only absolutely obedient unto death, but he also died the death of the cross. So, you know, he did so much more. And, of course, he was without sin. I can't say that. You can't say that. Can't nobody say that.
Right.
We strive for perfection, and that in the Hebrew and Greek both means spiritual maturity. You know, I witnessed, you know, I got 27 years of pastoral experience and 12 years as an evangelist. And it doesn't take me long to look at people that are spiritually immature, yet they think they are, you know, in a place of leadership. But watch what they do. Watch how they handle a situation. A man that has experience will tell you up front, I wouldn't do that if I were you. Well, why would you not do that? Well, I've made that mistake 20 years ago, and it won't turn out well. When you're talking to people in a fabrication shop that's making something, they can already tell you the pros and the cons. You can't do that way. Well, why can't we do it that way? Because I've tried it and it doesn't work. That's what we call empirical knowledge. There are things you've learned in your life that you definitely would not do them the same way again. Why? You learned something from it. And wisdom says, that will not happen to me again. I will learn from this, and not only will you learn from it, you will learn how to maneuver through that next situation or circumstance, because you now have the empirical knowledge. And I always tell people, if you go through a circumstance and don't learn anything from it, you're a fool. You're an absolute fool to go through any kind of a crisis in life, and then 5 years later, that same thing happens again. That means you're thick-headed. You didn't learn anything. I hate to have to do the same thing twice, no matter what I do in life. Boy, to have to go back and redo it. They'll tell you in business, if you got to go back and fix it, repair it again. You don't make money going back doing it the second time. You got to be one and done. So, you know, James 1:19, be slow to speak, swift to hear, and slow to wrath. You know, stop hit the pause button and say, hey, am I doing the right thing here? And if you're not sure, you call somebody that can help you, that may know something about that. I'm renowned when I don't understand something, man. Calling somebody, asking somebody, looking at a situation, reading on it, studying on it. The great thing about the internet, you can get a lot of insight on a lot of things because somebody's already been there and done that. And that's why the Bible said there's safety in the multitude of counsel. See, today pride is so destructive because people want to think like that's been Obama's whole failure in his presidency. I got a phone and I got a pen. Now that's a man that really wants counsel, that really wants advice, that really wants input. Now that's a man that says, I don't care if it's aeronautics or it's military maneuvers, I already know. Well, that's cynical. You can't be like that. But people who are like that, we use the term narcissistic, that's why they're always looked at, because you're always saying, well, why didn't you get some advice? Why didn't you ask somebody? You know? No man knows it all. It's good to bounce things off of other people. I got several emails today, people asking me, you know, what would you do about this situation? You know, and as you get older, you learn, number one, as a Christian, you learn to trust God, because you know in your heart, God is superior, He is supreme, He has the power over everything, He has power over men's thoughts. He can put something in a man's heart. Revelation 17:17, and I quoted that verse 1,000 times. God hath put it in their hearts to fulfill His will. God can put something in a man's heart that will bless you, but you got to have pure heart and a clean hand to not get ensnared. And then God said, "Well, I got to get you out of this mess. I can't bless you now because you're in a mess. I got to get you out of this mess." That was the great thing about the man of God, Joseph. Every encounter that he seemed to have, and all of them up till he got to be the viceroy, the prime minister of Egypt, was negative, 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 negative. But we don't read anywhere in the scriptures he had a negative attitude. I wish I could say that. but we never read about him grumbling or bickering or complaining. He took it in stride because he had trust in God. He believed those dreams he had. And those sheaves falling down and paying obeisance. And when they came in, his brethren, and thought he was, you know, this deity per se, they fell down and paid obeisance. And Joseph remembered the dreams, and he was seeing it come to pass. And it took, from the time he was 17 to 30, 13 years. That's a long time. To wait to see God bring to light, to bring to fruition. But that's why we're taught to be patient and wait on the Lord, because, brother, God does have a divine plan. I've said this before, you've heard me say it, the devil plots. God has a divine plan from the beginning until the end. Satan plots in the process, trying to disrupt God's plan for our lives. I just want to encourage the people tonight to continue to prepare. You know, I believe we've got a reprieve. I believe God has pushed the pause button. That does not stop the work of the enemy. When God spoke to Joseph to take Mary and Joseph, Mary and Jesus, and go down into Egypt till Herod died, that was to save them. And they were there until Herod had died. What does that tell you? God's counsel overcame Herod's scheme. Now, God could have killed Herod immediately, but he didn't do that. Why? I don't know. Because maybe the one that would take in his place would have had the same spirit. And God said, I'll just let him die, then the next one that comes along, he won't have that spirit, we won't have this encounter. But then there'll be the one that'll be in control when it comes time for him to be crucified. And he'll have that same spirit. So, you know, God is so vast and so large in these areas. And we always want to know, well, why? When all my kids were growing up, they get about, you know, 4 years of age. That's the number one question. Why? Why do you brush your teeth? Why do you blow dry? You remember that, Doug?
Oh, yeah.
Everything's why. And that's the way we are with God. Why? And And of course, God understands our hearts, and he knows we don't understand and know. But this is where trust comes in. Though my kids would ask me 10 times a day why, they never once said, "Hey, Dad, is there going to be soap in there for me to take a bath tomorrow?"
That's right.
They just expect it to be there. See, is there going to be toothpaste in there tomorrow? We're going to have
cereal.
Something.
Yeah.
You're going to have cereal, milk? Yeah.
Yep.
They don't ask those questions. Why? They trust me, and they just expect it to be there. And that's how we should trust God and expect God to deliver us, to redeem us. I mean, read the Psalms. David cried out so many times, you know, "How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long shall mine enemy be exalted over me?" And then you drop down to verse 6, and there in Psalms 13, he said, "I will sing unto the Lord because he hath dealt bountifully with me." Well, what happened? Well, God moved. His heart changed. His attitude changed. He said, "Now I'm going to sing unto the Lord because he's dealt bountifully with me." But before that, man, it's just all negative. Mm-hmm. See? And then we see in his latter years, in Psalms 37:23, he said, "The steps of a good man ordered by the Lord. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down. I have been young, I am now old, yet have I never seen the righteous forsaken, nor seed begging bread." What he was saying, looking back over his life, he said, "You know what? God took care of me through everything. The bear, the lion, Goliath, all the wars I fought, all the battles I fought, God spared me." And he said, "I can look back and say, you know, I've never seen the righteous forsaken one time." And that's how we have to live in this world, because this ultimate end time storm, war, Armageddon, collapse, cashless society, all this is coming. But the great thing is we know it's coming and we're not in darkness, so we can plan and prepare for it and not be freaked out when it does come. That's the great joy. We ought to be so happy because we are in the know. We're not like the world. I look at people every day and I'm like, man, you don't have a clue what's going on. But I don't go over and bash them. I just pray for them. But I think in my mind, you don't understand what's going on in this world. But unless the Spirit of God deals with them, you're just not going to make them understand. The Spirit has to bring that illumination in their own heart and mind.
Right. Boy, is that ever true?
Yeah, and that's the good thing about being on the inside with God. He keeps us abreast. He keeps us sober. He keeps us alert to these things that's taking place, brother.
Thank God.
Amen.
I mean, and it's good to have the inside track. It's really, I mean, I don't need, I, perhaps that's the wrong way of saying it, but understanding the Bible, understanding the Word of God, reading and then being immersed in the Word of God, being obedient, all of these things are all components that will help us understand and get through and weather the storm that's coming.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So, wow.
You know, I want to share one thing. I've got a little old DVD, and it's the King James Bible, Old and New Testaments. It's a DVD. You can see the scriptures on the screen, but Alexander Scorby is narrating it. And my wife and I've made a commitment this year to go through my Bible numerous times, but since last night I have watched and listened to 62 chapters. I will listen to all of Genesis and the first 12 chapter in Exodus. Turn off the television, put the DVD in and listen to it. You'll be surprised at how much you will learn. I forget what we asked for. It's on our website. That is one of the greatest tools because you have the auditory and the visualization of hearing the scriptures and reading the scriptures. And in two nights, my wife and I have gone through 62 chapters, all of Genesis last night and into 12 tonight because I had to be on program with you. But that's a great tool if you want to get into something and get disciplined to get into the Bible where you just watch an hour a day. I would dare say in 60 hours you can go through the whole Bible. It'd be a blessing to a lot of people.
And that's on your website. And I'm sorry, what is it called, Pastor?
It's just the DVD, King James Bible on DVD, and Alexander Scorby is doing the narrating.
Okay. All right.
It's a great tool. I mean, I use it. I mean, like I said, since last night, I've watched the video, and you hear his voice reading the scriptures to you, 62 chapters since last night.
Fantastic. Yeah, we'll put that up in the program description as well for people to access that easily. TheVoiceOfEvangelism.com. TheVoiceOfEvangelism.com. I believe it's under media.
Yeah, it is under media, I'm pretty sure. I think it's $30-$35 postage paid, but it's right. A DVD. It's got a lot of great stuff on it. Of course, it's Alexander Scorby's voice. And then they've got the Word of God up there like on a Bible. And you can read it and listen to him, and you learn a lot of pronunciation at the same time.
that's important, especially for me.
All of us, Doug.
Yeah, absolutely. Pastor, thanks for your gift of time and
yes,
for your
thank
insight
you.
And your inspiration.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. God bless.
God bless you. Have a great night. Thank you for allowing me to be here. Bye-bye.
Folks, that'll do it for us on behalf of John, J.D., Eric the Tech, Jackie, Joe, myself. God bless. And Lady of the Studio Dog, God bless each and every one of you.